this one, but you're a horse, so it's like a romantic novel.
I'm currently honoring a pug. Just, you know, that's what I'm doing over here.
Good evening, everyone. Welcome to Two Dads Talking. Tom found something called theuselessweb.com. And it takes you to a random web page when you click the button. And I am on a page called alwaysjudgeabookbyitscover.com. And it's just, you know, I'm looking at something called crap taxidermy.
The dirty business. Someone's got to do it.
There's this next one, some old farmer guy laughing on his cover. And it says, "Everything I know about women I learned from my tractor."
Would love to know what you can learn about women from your tractor.
I need to get, this is a book that my sister got, this book from my mother. It's the Field Guide to Dumb Birds of North America. It's actually really funny. It's someone who writes very insultingly about birds and describes them. It's like, if you ever hear this screeching a-hole, that's because it's the female trying to find the one male that will leave her in the spring, just like all the others. It's language like that. It's just like, you can hear this dumb idiot.
That's a book my wife would probably love. My wife has been attacked by birds and challenged by ostriches and chased by peacocks. My wife would probably love that book.
It's pretty funny, actually. I need to get out of here. How to Raise Your IQ by Eating Gifted Children. Close.
Welcome to Two Dads Talking, where we're having an extra special kind of night. We're definitely all feeling a little extra tonight.
Yes, definitely not basic like we were before. Tonight we're extra.
You told me I was bougie.
I feel like that's kind of a comparative judgment, and compared to me, it's really not that hard to be bougie, as I've stated previously. So, yeah, we are catching up on editings and everything else. Thank you, by the way, for all the downloads and listens and the feedback. We have been getting some feedback on each side, too. So we're trying to make this just a little bit more funsical for all of you. I think we should start with something that's hopefully soon to be current when we finally get through this. Do you want to start with our Super Bowl predictions?
Oh, we should start with Super Bowl predictions.
Mere days away from something that I will not watch.
You're really not going to watch it?
Probably not. Yes, the Super Bowl is fun. Yes, the Super Bowl is neat to watch. But it's basically the two teams from each conference I did not want to see. It was like, pick the one team you don't actually want to make it because boring or whatever. It's this exact game. And, you know, just, we have an infant. We got stuff to do.
That's fair.
I'm not going to sit and gain 5 pounds of Doritos watching two teams I both despise.
I have been super, super in control of my calories the last 9 days, 8 days, and I'm going to be good all week so that I can't eat badly during the Super Bowl and enjoy the Super Bowl. Yeah, we'll make some predictions. Not only will I make predictions, I'll make two. I will make a final score prediction for you, and I will tell you the score of the Super Bowl before it starts. 0-0.
No. Who's the home team? It's 3-0 as far as betting is concerned.
We didn't say as far as betting was concerned. No, I like the Niners to win this game. And I think it's going to be a lower scoring game than people seem to think.
Damn it, I should have gone first.
Yeah, sorry. I'm going to go with something really ugly, like 20-12. Like something really funky and ugly.
Okay, that is ugly. That's even uglier than I was going. So I also think the Niners are going to win. I was thinking 24-20. But if you want to make things more interesting, I'll make it sort of a pseudo side prediction. I'm going to tell you exactly how I got to that score. Chiefs score first, 7-0. Everyone's all excited. Yay, Taylor Swift's in love with her boyfriend. He proposes to her right there in the end zone at the end of the first quarter, whatever. Then The 49ers take two more touchdowns to come back and you know, pee in everyone's Cheerios. It's 14-7. Chiefs tie it up, and then Chiefs get a field goal. 49ers get a field goal. Now you're at 17-17. There's some time now where no one's scoring. I envision that like halftime will be something like 14-14 or 17-14, one of those types of things. 49ers will score earlier in the fourth quarter and go up 24-17. The Chiefs will go down. Maybe there'll be like two, three possessions back and forth. The Chiefs will go down. There'll be like 5 or 6 minutes left, and they'll decide to take the points and they'll take their field goal to get to 24-20. And then 49ers will probably get close, but make some sort of little mistake, like take a sack when they shouldn't, or something. Something will happen that they'll just decide to punt it deep, and the Chiefs will probably stall as time runs out, somewhere around the 20 to 30 yard line.
All right, go place your bets, guys. That's it.
Right
That's how it's going to
there.
be. I'll make a bold prop bet for you. I will bet you $1 that the Chiefs
Oh
have
God.
more turnovers than they have touchdowns in the Super Bowl this year.
Oh, that's a good prop bet. I was thinking really novice prop bets, like over under 3 touchdowns for Mahomes. Legs or feet or air. So this is more turnovers than touchdowns. You think they're going to have more turnovers than touchdowns?
That's where I am. Yep.
Okay, well, I'm saying 2 touchdowns. Do I win if it's 2-2?
Not to push. If it's even, it's push.
Fuck your push.
You know
It's
what? That's fine. I'll take actually I'll lay
a
it I'll lay you
winner. No,
minus I'll lay you plus 0.5. That's fine.
let's do the
If it's
push.
a tie, you win, because I specifically said more turnovers than touchdowns. So if it's equal, you win. Yes.
Let's do the bush push in honor of what we were talking about. We'll do the bush push.
Boy, I hope people paid attention to previous episodes. They know what we're talking
Yeah.
about and they don't assume what we're talking about, because damn it, Doug.
I would've been like, ew.
So, for the third time, welcome to Two Dads Talking.
I'll take it. I'll take your bet just because it's fun to have a dollar on something. Now I'll actually look it up on my phone later that night.
Oh, you're going to watch it now. Now you're going to watch the game. Like, I have a dollar
No.
riding on this. I'm going to watch this damn
No, I'm
thing.
not.
I'll be texting you updates.
I used to be that person. If I start seeing you texting, like, oh, they got one turnover, I'm like, well, I'm gonna block Tom for 4 hours.
I'll be more obnoxious than that. I'll send you like screenshots of the ESPN play-by-play.
Funny. I like it. Okay, cool.
Look at that. We're gambling now. We are
Yes.
such bad influences.
We are live gambling and recording it. But luckily, this will not be out until after the Super Bowl's over. So there, huh? We're not promoting gambling. We'll put a phone number somewhere. This is the part where we shake hands through Zoom.
Huzzah. Yeah, we can do that.
Is there like a pinky promise emoji to really solidify this? Because we need something really
So the
super
video
serial.
and audio recording isn't enough.
No. We've talked about AI. We've talked about deep
True.
fakes.
That's true. Yeah.
Not that there's someone out there being like, oh yeah, we should deep fake these two idiots.
Was gonna say, no one's spending the time or money in deep faking the two of us. That's not happening. Unless the CIA really does come and black bag you and drag you off, then maybe. Like, I could be talking to an artificial intelligent Doug right now, and you could actually be in some basement somewhere getting waterboarded for all I know.
Well, I feel bad for me then because I'm a really convincing robot. I have no idea that I'm the AI, so.
So we've got our Super Bowl predictions in. One thing Doug and I have taken from some feedback given to us is that we should sort of put some structure into the show. So we're going to work on creating a format here and kind of giving you guys something a little bit more predictable and expected every week. We're going to have something that's either a current event or a parenting topic or a real life story we're going to work in every time. And then we're going to work into sort of a top three of something random, just because that's something we can have fun with and rabbit hole down, and you guys get to disagree with us and tell us we're idiots.
Because we are.
Right. But you know, like when I tell Doug I think Zoolander was a stupid movie and a waste of my time, and I'm mad he made me watch it, you guys can all take a side and yell at me, and that's fine. And that's why we're providing this forum. He's shooting me death lasers into the computer right
No,
now.
I agree with everything except the last part. It is stupid and it
AI
is a waste of time, except I loved it.
robot Doug is shooting me lasers through Zoom right now. It's kind of terrifying.
Pew pew.
But then we're going to get into sort of an update section where we give an update on something we've discussed previously in another episode if we have those updates. And for that, you know, maybe you guys are sending us things. Maybe we're discovering something after the fact. Maybe we're just correcting the asinine assumptions that we made and where we were way off base with things, like our Super Bowl predictions. Stay tuned for that update. And then at the end, we're going to finish with our dad jokes. We're going to try to end it on, as I say way too often on the show, on that happy note. And that's going to be a t-shirt too, I think, unfortunately, just because I say
Oh,
it way too
we're already
much.
there.
I just say that way too often.
If I'm harassing you enough, it should be out there by now.
Yeah. But by the time you listen to this, yes, there should be a whole lot of merchandise options out there for you. And we'll try to wrap it up on that. So we did not really prepare much for this week. It's been kind of a crazy week for both of us, and we didn't line these things up. So we're going to go a little bit random. I don't think we have a real topic prepared for tonight, do we?
No, not really. I mean, this is, I can give you sort of a real life thing that happened to us, thing to talk about initially. We went to my parents for a get together. And on the way back, at one point, there was we were behind, we were 2 cars behind this person, but we were there's a stretch of road that's 55 miles an hour. Someone was going 45, and the rest of us were stuck there. We were 2 cars behind the person, but the car immediately behind us was two obviously teenage males. People tailgate, I get it, and they get impatient and all that. These guys were so close to us, we might as well have been a parking lot parked. They were right there. Not, I mean, within 2 feet of bumpers right there, and we're going, 45. It was stupid for them to even be doing that. I think they were so close that they could not react to me even brake checking them if I wanted to. Even if I wanted to mess with them, they were so close that I couldn't even do that. And it definitely stressed, well, it stressed my wife out for sure. It stresses me out a little bit, mostly because I just don't know what the car would do if something happened and I've got the kids in the car. We're all buckled, we're all safe, but still, I don't want to deal with that situation. So, the parenting moment out of this, the easy one is try to teach your kids not to drive like that. And it's not necessarily because you're going to stress other people out, it's because you're going to kill yourself if you do that. You're just increasing your odds of something bad happening to you. You have complete control over your vehicle. No, not everyone's perfect. No, not everyone's going to make the best decisions on the road, but try to do little things to help yourself out a little bit. If, especially because you don't know what other people are going to do, you should be doing things to help protect you, your family, yourself. I mean, as a dad, in some ways, the most important part of you protecting your family is protecting yourself. What it also reminded me of is a very personal, very petty feeling that I've held near and dear for years now. On the news, and we've all heard it, someone died in a car accident. It's always a pseudo sad, pseudo puff piece. Everyone loved so and so. Everyone loved Jennifer. Everyone loved Steve. They were a college student, or they just finished college and they were trying to work on their career with whatever, or they left behind two beautiful children. And it's always the, oh, how sad. But half the time, if you really think about it, it's not like they got rammed by some drunk driver. It's not like some force of nature did anything to them. It was, realistically, it was icy and they were driving too fast and they didn't do the right thing. They lost control of their vehicle. So I had this exact thought while these kids were following me. I was thinking, these are two 18-year-olds, maybe even 17-year-olds by the looks of them. And trust me, they were so close. I got a really good look at them. They could not have been older. They were definitely not 21, for sure. They were that kind of young. And they were just annoyed that they had to be going this slowly. They were going a whole half vehicle over the double yellow line in single lane. in a 55 both ways just to see if I was the problem when I was driving. And I just thought, you know, if they made the wrong move or made a mistake, clipped something, went off the edge because there's a spot where it's kind of a high slope, they went off the edge and they died, someone would sit there and say, oh no, they were going to go to college. They were going to do this. Everybody loved them. They had so many friends. And I would want to go up to the camera and be like, he needed to be better. The only reason he's dead is because of him. And yes, it's petty. And yes, it's insensitive. And I'm not saying I wouldn't feel bad for the kid because I'm not going to sit here and tell you that I wasn't a stupid freaking idiot when I was 18 years old or any other time. We did spend a whole episode talking about my arrest, by the way. So there's that. But the point of that story, me telling it, if you remember, was there's a lot I learned from there. There's a lot I did wrong. And in some senses, I got lucky. I got a very humbling, long, awful experience from that. And I didn't have to have anything bad actually happen to me. So when I see stuff like this, I get annoyed because other people would feel bad for something bad happening to them when it was entirely their fault and entirely up to them to not do it. Tom disagrees. Go, Tom.
No, I absolutely agree. There's nothing more frustrating in the moment than some other person being reckless and selfish and, you know, risking taking you and your family off the road or off the planet because they're simply being foolish and you know, selfish, and they don't give a damn about other people. So a little mistake like that, I get. We had an incident when I was in Italy where someone wasn't happy with how fast we were driving. And they pulled around us and got in front of us. We were doing about 125 on, I forget what the Italians call it, the autobandieri or whatever. We were doing like 125 miles per hour down this highway. Me and three soldiers in a car that we had rented. It was a Mercedes, and it was super fun to have rented a Mercedes, drive it to Rome and back. And some car was really, really mad that we were only doing 125 miles an hour. And they got around and passed us and got in front of us and locked up their brakes. Like, we went from 125 to literally 0 miles an hour, and we were inches from their bumper. It was a miracle that we didn't smash them. And they did it just to be, you know, dicks. And in hindsight, that could have very easily taken the lives of every single person involved. Four soldiers in my car and whoever was in that car. And, you know, it's just a selfish, irresponsible moment that could have dramatically changed the last 20 years of my life. Or ended them and changed the last 20 years of my wife's life and my family and their families. So yeah, no, you're right. There's nothing in the moment more frustrating than that. And yes, we should teach our kids, don't be reckless to that point. Don't, you know, you're allowed to be foolish. Don't be inconsiderate and dangerous and reckless foolish. But I think that there's also a part in there where, yeah, they probably did take their own lives. If that had come to the worst case scenario, people would have lamented their loss and they would have said nice things about them. But that's okay. If someone had lived a good life, we all have moments where we do something stupid. We all have moments where we get caught up in peer pressure or in the moment or in some other motivator where we do something that is uncharacteristic of us and that in hindsight we look at and say, that was a low moment for me. You know, that's not a good moment for me. And if it has that extreme consequence and it has something terrible that comes of it, then, you know, you judge it a little harder. But we are all allowed to be stupid. And thank God, because I've had my dumb moments in the past. You know, if you had that night, night of your DUI, if you hadn't gotten pulled over and maybe you had gotten into a crash and killed somebody, maybe you killed a kid, you know, maybe just you died. Would you not want people to say, wow, Doug made a mistake that night. Doug was stupid that night. He was a really good guy. I can't believe he did that. I'm going to miss him. And like lament your loss, you know?
I will not sit there and tell you that I've been God's gift to driving, obviously, or that I haven't been a little jerk behind the wheel at times. I mean, very recently, someone has broken me of the habit of if someone's tailgating me and obviously being annoyed with me, I slow down more. So I don't do that anymore.
I still do that one.
Yeah, and you know, part of it was also me thinking it through also was if someone is really going to be, let's just use the word unreasonable, behind the wheel of a car and tailgate you or swerve or you know, basically come close to hitting you if they're trying to go around you, I think the safest thing that I can do is be 100% predictable. So if someone's tailgating me, whatever speed I'm going, I hit the cruise control if I can, and I stay that speed. I don't hit the car in front of me and stuff like that, but it upsets, I'm sure it upsets them more. But for example, if I'm in like the left lane because I was just recently passing someone and someone is tailgating the crap out of me, I don't even change lanes and get out of their way. I hit the cruise control and I wait and I let them do their thing, because if they try to make a move around me or they try to accelerate from my lane change, I don't want to be part of their equation at all. If I'm doing a lane change and they're expecting my lane change to go a little bit faster, I don't want that to be, then I'm the one getting hit in the back corner and spinning out. So they might think I'm a bigger a-hole to them, but to me, I am being absolutely 100% predictable, and they can continue to be pissing me and all that. So with these, just to use them because they're convenient now, these two idiot teenagers, they may not actually be idiot teenagers. Behind the wheel, they might be idiot teenagers, or at least behind the wheel that day, they might have been idiot teenagers. And I feel like when people do those, oh no, everyone loved him. It's too bad he did something stupid behind the wheel. No one says the last part. I'm not saying you should be judged on that, but I'm saying that we should be realistic about it, because if we don't highlight that, if we don't kind of say, hey, they did a wrong thing, then that doesn't get anyone else to sit there and think maybe I shouldn't do that. And that's kind of my concern. I'm not saying that we shouldn't try to highlight them or shouldn't try to like talk good about them, because Lord knows if I was judged on my worst moments and only those, it would not look good. Okay, if this was them doing this on like a stunt course on their own or like 5 a.m. with no traffic and they did something stupid, yes, I'll still say they're stupid, but boys will be boys would kind of be more my reaction to something like that. But right now you're doing something that can affect me and my family, and like we've talked about in past conversations, that's a problem. Now I am less forgiving. You being dangerous to yourself, in a way, that's your call. You doing something that could be dangerous to me, no, now I get an opinion in the matter, and I feel like I get to call you stupid for that because it does affect me potentially. And I have responsibilities and obligations, and you are kind of butting in on them and making my life more difficult because I'm trying to do right by my family and you're not.
Well, I mean, here's the thing. If something like that happened to me and someone, tailgated me and caused an accident and I lost the life of my kid or my wife or we were horribly disfigured, guess what? All of my mercy and my grace and all this goodwill that I'm trying to preach right now, I'm not probably not a big enough person to maintain it after something like that actually happens. I'm probably going to be coming down with a wrath and a vengeance and a lack of forgiveness that would trouble me if I were to look at it in this moment. But taking that third party seat and looking at this from sort of just a bigger picture point of view, I understand what you're saying. And yes, when something like that happens, when there's a drunk driver who hits and kills someone, and I feel like I'm not picking on you when I keep making this analogy. It just feels like a very good analogy for this. It's one that I think of often, and it's one that I think we talked about it earlier.
It's
My
pivotal to
stepbrother,
both of us. It's pivotal to you, and it's very personal for me because I was on the other side,
So I'm not
literally.
trying to pick on you by bringing that up. It's just, I think, a relevant analogy. But when I think of a drunk driver having an awful accident and dying, there's a lot of, wow, you selfish a-hole. Like, that person, what a selfish act, what a selfish a-hole. And I don't see those, generally positioned as, this was a beautiful, loving person. If you don't see what a wonderful angel this person was, then screw you, go to hell. I don't see that ever. And that's why I feel like that's a straw man argument. But what I do think
Them's fighting words.
it might be, I think, given my, the last couple of months, I think when someone passes, I think a great deal of how they're remembered and how they're talked about and what is said and done for them, a great deal of that is done to pay homage and pay respect and really try to give that person something now that they're gone, because you miss them and they're worth it. I think that's a big part of it. But I think another huge part of why all that is done is to help the people who are still carrying on without them and dealing with that loss. I think a lot of how you handle a person's death in the aftermath is about helping and caring for the loved ones that are still here mourning their loss. And I think that's probably a reason why you don't have all those negative things in there, because if two 18-year-olds wreck that car and wrap it around a tree and die in a burning ball of fire on the highway, the people that are left to deal with that are their mother, their father, their friends, their siblings. And it doesn't help them in any way to see negative headlines every day and hear the press talk every day and someone at the media stand up on a soapbox and say, these kids were selfish, reckless a-holes and they did it to themselves, so fuck them. You know, it's a lot of this is about the people that are left behind too. It's not just about respecting the one who's gone. It's about taking care of the ones they leave behind so that other tragedy doesn't happen, so that, you know, you do something to help compensate the pain that they're feeling. And I think that's a big part of why I disagree with the take, is that it's more complex than just pointing a finger at someone and saying, you effed up, you deserve this. Hope no one else does this. That is a part of it, and it does need to be observed, but I think it's bigger than that. I think it's deeper than that.
I mean, I should just say you're right and be done with this and move on.
Where's the fun in that?
I know, right? It's no fun in it. Let me try to explain myself here. Most of the time, I would hold the same standards to myself. If I was the person behind the wheel, if I did something stupid, that's kind of my feeling is like that's on me. It is on me. It is my fault. It was in my control. There's a whole lot in this world you can't control, but you can control yourself. And I'm not that I'm one to do the blame game, but if you could do things to mitigate, you know, whatever happened, then there should be some onus on you for at least not having done that. It may still have been unavoidable, but you could still have potentially helped the situation. And I've thought about this too already. With my kids, the discussion will not be focused on you could have hurt yourself, you could have crashed. That will be the start because I'll think that that's at least the first thing that needs to get through because someone who drives like that is only thinking about their own personal whims. But I would spend a whole lot more time on what if you hit somebody? What if you hurt someone else? What if you killed someone's 5-year-old. You know, what if you killed someone who's the same age as your younger brother? That would be my message. Because that's how I think about it with other people. That's how I'm, I guess, in the spirit of AI robots programmed is to say that I am throwing my grumpy pants everywhere and running around in my grumpy underwear and being a generally crazy person about this. But this is how I would talk to my own kids about this. These are the same things that I would tell my own kids. I'm being sort of an unabashed a-hole on here about this by other people's standards. And I'm not saying I am allowed to be, but I'm saying that trust me that I'm also being logically consistent. I would be this exact same way with my own kids. It's kind of like don't throw stones in glass houses. If I'm going to sit here and stand on my soapbox, then myself and my own family better be just as locked down tight before I do that.
I'm trying to figure out how I want to say this. I'm torn between asking a question and then just kind of like being like, well, this is why that feels weird to me. And I don't know what the better approach is here.
You know what I'm going to say?
Well,
Both.
probably. Yeah. Okay. I'm going to take the Socratic approach instead and I'm going to ask a question.
No, don't do that.
Yeah.
I
It's
prefer platonic, Tom.
Yeah, well, that's too bad. This is no longer what you want. You've put me in the hot seat here on a very sensitive subject, and damn
You're
it, going
tailgating
where
me,
I
you
want.
son of a
I'm hitting the gas.
bitch. Okay.
Fast
Go for
forward
it.
to 10 or 11 or 12 years, and your kid does something reckless like this and gets caught and gets written a ticket, and the police officer calls you out to pick your kid up to make it real and sit in their head, you know. The way I would do it is, you know, to make the father come pick up the kid, let everyone get a real taste of how real it is. So let's say that happens, and the officer describes what your kid was doing, and it was real reckless driving, very aggressive, swerving around cars, tailgating them, pulling up next to them, flipping the bird, and doing all kinds of crazy wild stuff, right?
This is fantastic, picturing my 5-year-old daughter doing this.
Oh yeah, that's why I had to make sure I got the decade and a half right.
Here's the worst part. One daughter, I can totally see doing it. And the other daughter, I'm like, that's not her.
That's the one that's gonna do
Right.
it. So you show up on scene, the officer explains this to you, you start boiling, right? You'd probably be pretty angry because by then you had to change your depends and drive out there, and you had to get your night glasses on because you don't see so well. And
Put in my angry dentures.
right. Put in your angry dentures. You had to remember the pin to your hollow car because you couldn't remember your damn pin because the kids set it up and it wasn't synced right.
Fucking
And
pin.
so you get out there.
Special character.
Right. You get out there and you hear all this. And then the officer says, "All right, she's all yours," and gives her the ticket, the court date, and she's all yours now. And you have this talk with her and you explain this to her and say, "Listen up, Papa. You're going to hear what I have to say." You give them that exact talk.
And for reference, you're saying the you could have hurt yourself, but also more importantly, you could have hurt somebody else.
Right,
Talk.
right,
Okay.
right. And then you talk about how, this isn't just a standard I've set for you. I've lived this my whole life. I thought you were too. However you want to take that roach, or that approach and that road. And then she looks up at you and says, "Dad, it's kind of hard to hear this from you knowing you had a DUI. What does that do?"
In my opinion, every situation can be most properly judged by exactly two sort of general circumstances. Some of them are you have to personally be in the situation to really fully understand it and make the truly wise decision about it. The other one is you have to be the detached third party. A really good example. And crappy example, but like a really good like thing that everyone will understand is the smoker, the longtime smoker who is smoking a cigarette right now and looks at their kids and says, "Don't smoke, it's bad for you." They're not wrong, but that's not the right person to be delivering that to you. The person who's delivering that to you is either someone who's never smoked before, who has some of the data behind it to show you why it's bad. And or someone who is squarely not in that world, someone who used to be in that world. They smoked and then they quit and they can tell you why their life got better. Again, sort of a crappy analogy, but that's where I'm going with this. So if my daughter, let's say, does this and says, "Well, that's rich coming from you," my response, depending upon how I'm feeling, can be one of two things. It can be either, yeah. I know exactly what's waiting for you if you get the non-death end of consequences. And it's a lot worse than what you got already and what you're getting already. So you decide if you want to have an even rougher time than you've already had. Or the other response is, yeah. And you notice how I never did that again? Sort of like a don't make the same mistakes that I did, but also sort of like, look, I learned from it. So are you going to be a big kid now and learn from yours too, or are you going to continue to be an idiot? So that would be my personal response to that. I don't shy away from what happened to me. I originally wanted to, but it is a part of who I am. And I feel like it's not that I have a right to talk about it more because I've been through it, but it's that I have sort of been there, at least from the consequences side. I don't have the same perspective as some other people who have been in slightly different situations. I will also, if and if my daughter asked, I would say that in certain instances, I would have more authority to tell them that's stupid if I had never gotten in trouble for it. I would admit that. I would say, you know what? You're right. I made a mistake, a bigger one than you made just now. So while I could argue that you need to be better because I am, I can also argue that you need to be better because I wasn't, and now I am. And you're ha at least half of me, so you should be able to get there. And the other half of you is better than I am, so you kind of have no excuse to get there. So.
I really hope my kids have at least 60% of my wife and only 40% of me.
Oh my God, 70-30, man. I swear.
I want my kids to have my height. I do want them to be tall. So I feel like I'm gonna go with 40% just give them a better chance of being tall.
Yeah, but Tom Cruise is short and he's sexy as hell, so you can still make it. It's fine. Even with that weird
Yes.
gap in his teeth right in the middle of his mouth, which you can't unsee once you see it.
What did you say about 15 episodes about outliers and how we throw those out and don't count them in our studies? Like, you know.
I am an outlier. Throw me out. This is well documented. My wife is the smarter, funnier, prettier, more responsible one.
That means you're more cunning because you got her.
Yeah, well, you said that we should not be judged by our mistakes. So,
Well played, sir. Well played.
thank you. Well, I think it's time to get into dad jokes at this point,
Yeah.
just considering how it went.
We're gonna leave out all the structure we were gonna try
Yeah, I know.
to
I know. You're muted again, man. My
I have
God.
no idea why that's muting. There's
The
got to be
dad
some
has
weird
joined the chat
shortcut.
and he can't figure out his mute button.
I know, right? It's crazy. Do you want to do a quick top three since we talked about it? I had an idea,
You,
given
do you have
that.
an idea?
Yeah, just
Sure, we can do it since
give.
considering 40 minutes of this will be edited out,
Oh, it better be
we
more
might
than
as
that.
well.
For those listening, just for reference, it is currently 11 p.m. We jumped on the call tonight at about 9:10 p.m. So that's when you hear a
But we didn't
35 minute or a
record
40
until
minute.
then. That's
No,
fine.
we had administrative stuff to talk about, but we've certainly been talking for over an hour, and we've probably got 30 minutes of content that we want to keep. So,
Yeah. Okay. Top three.
yes.
Okay.
So,
I'm interested. Yes. What do you have for us for a top three then?
based on a lot of the conversation that I think is going to be edited out, and I kind of hope is going to be edited out, what you may or may not have heard in this podcast is we did some post-apocalyptic talk about some movies and some things shortly. Hopefully, Doug edits it all out because I'm pretty sure it's going to be boring to anybody but us. But what are your top three post-apocalyptic movies?
Oh no.
Yeah, I know you like your sci-fi, your futuristic movies. Off the top of your head, give me the best three.
Oh, the problem with this
Or
is
your favorite three. Doesn't have to be the best. One or the other.
no. Well, fair. Good distinction. Good distinction. I would sit there asking, wondering that. Okay, here's a good one. It's the one with
Book of
Denzel
Eli?
Washington. Yes, thank you. The Book of Eli.
That's a good one.
Absolutely love that movie. And yes, a little bit of a religious-ish undertone to it that they kind of allude to at times. But one of the reasons that I love that movie so much is because Gary Oldman is awesome in that movie.
He's the antagonist, right? He's the bad
He's
guy.
the antagonist, yes.
Yeah, he was really, really good.
He's really, really good. He pulls off the perfect, like, unhinged, holding it together, and Eli finally breaks him kind of character, where he gets revealed as not just a strong despot, but actually truly 100% selfish to the point that it's his downfall. It does kind of have that same religious undertone of pride and hubris ultimately being your downfall, even in a post-apocalyptic world. I love that movie. One of the ones that I really liked a lot that I shouldn't have liked, I feel like, because of what all is in it, is Snowpiercer.
Oh, I hated that movie so much.
It's one of those movies where when I was watching it, I was like, ooh, 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 this is such a weird freaking movie. But by the time I got to the end of the movie, I sort of it was worth my time. And I think it was more, I think I appreciated more the setup, if you will, the idea of being on the train, the rest of the world being ice. I liked that. I also appreciated the fact that every apocalyptic movie is, oh, World War III happened. I mean, even the Book of Eli, they call it the Flash, and or it's always desert and all that. This was like, oh, we blotted out the sun and now we're just a bunch of ice and cold and everything everywhere. And I just liked that they went a different direction with it. It was one of those movies that I for some reason, I kind of liked it. I did not like the details, the content, if you will, with the train cars, but I liked the overall concept. And this is going to be a little bit of a cliche answer, but the other one I really, 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 really liked was 12 Monkeys.
Oh, Monkeys was a really good one.
And not just because it's Bruce Willis, who me and my wife would both leave each other to marry. It's okay. I'd be Bruce Willis's side piece if he'll have me. It's not even the cyclical logic that I like about it. I love the mistakes that are highlighted by the end it for the future folk. I mean, hell, the title of the movie is about the stupid like side group that Brad Pitt's character creates to release all the animals from the zoo, and somehow lost in translation, they think that these are the bad guys, and they're basically turned into a big harmless nothing, and you realize it by the end of the movie. So that was my favorite because that shows exactly how you can get hung up on exactly the wrong thing. Also, that movie is one of those ones where I've had this real conversation probably two or three different times where someone would say, oh, Brad Pitt, like, yeah, he's kind of a good actor, but he gets by on his looks because he's such an attractive guy. And I always tell people, go watch 12 Monkeys. He is awesome in that movie. He's an absolute Looney Tune, crazy person who's just barely put together enough to cause trouble in the real world. I think that's one of his, like, that's one of those performances by him that I absolutely love. That's not him being a pretty boy either.
I don't understand why he doesn't get more respect as an actor. He is, I think, a phenomenal actor. It just
Yeah.
he takes some challenging, hard roles, and he's good in everything. I've never seen Brad Pitt be bad in a role, ever.
Yeah, I think some of it is ironically superficial too. I mean, the Mr. and Mrs. Smith movie with him and Angelina Jolie.
Yeah, I like that
Yeah,
movie.
I do too. Not just because he was an art history major at Notre Dame,
Yes.
but he.
You were art? He's like art history, respectable.
He has this ability, and truly not everybody has it, where he can do the funny without being funny for his character. I mean, remember when he's like, oh well, I've got like 70 kills or whatever, and he's like, how many do you have? Because he's sitting there thinking I'm gonna be all like macho,
She's
and
like
she's
342.
well, but no, but she balks at first. You see her face and she's like, oh shit, I'm gonna make him feel so bad about himself. I don't even, you can see her for a second be like, I wonder if I should lie. And then she says, yeah, 272 or something. And he just, no. It's like she tries to console him and he's like, fuck, leave me alone. Yeah, he has that sort of comedic whatever it is with his roles. And I do think that's part of the reason why I like 12 Monkeys, because he does some things where he's just being the crazy person, but it's funny. It's tiny little itty bitty shades of what Heath Ledger was with the Joker. He says some things that are like, what? But he's completely serious about it. And he just pulls it off well. He does not get as much credit as he deserves for some of that stuff.
I agree. 100% I agree.
Okay, what's yours?
So 12 Monkeys was probably going to be on my list, but I can't give the same one you did. That would be lame. But 12 Monkeys probably would have made my list.
I mean, I can change it if you want, because there is one more that I kind of wanted to put on there, but.
No, that's fine. We'll keep it to three so we don't go for 2 more hours. Number one on my list is The Postman, which is kind of an older one, but a fantastic Kevin Costner movie. I take you haven't seen this by the look on your face.
Nope.
Honestly, it's probably one of his two or three best movies that he has done. The world ends, and it's a World War III style end. I actually wrote a short story based on this world. But the world ends, and you've got one gentleman, the antagonist, who you will love. I think when you see who it is and you see the character, you will fall in love with the antagonist. He is a fan of Shakespeare and education. It's a world without anything anymore. People are basically living in little villages. There's no more country. There's no more community. You've got your little bitty village, and that's what you've got. And this one gentleman who's sort of this highly educated, philosophical bad guy has gathered together the remaining bikers and thugs and hoodlums and all the tough guys and become sort of their enlightened leader and created an army and is marching across the barren landscape of America and just taking over towns, forcing them to pay tax to him. He's Genghis Khan, and he's forcing, them to pay taxes to him and provide whatever resources they have and to go out and farm and to go scavenge for him. And he's running the world. It's his world. Most of these little towns, until he's taken them over, don't know he exists. They don't know other people exist. Everyone seems to think their town is the last town. And there's this one gentleman played by Kevin Costner who's kind of roaming out in the world trying to get by. He's not really a good guy. He's all on his own. He's kind of selfish. And one night he takes shelter in this old FedEx truck that had crashed off the side of the road. He needs shelter from a storm, and that's where he stays. And while he's in there, he takes the clothes off the dead corpse, which is now a skeleton because it's been so long, and he starts burning letters for heat, and then he starts reading letters. And these are all letters that were never delivered. They were written before the world ended, and there's no mail, there's no internet, there's no telephone, like no one communicates. And he stumbles into a town, and he's got the postman's clothes on, and he's got a mail bag, and he delivers mail to this town that was written to it before the world ended. And it's not his intent to do this, but he's trying to get food and shelter and get put up for the night. But he gives them this mail, and he brings them this beacon of hope, and he makes up this story about President Starkey, I think is the name he makes up, and how there's a new United States of America, and the first order was to establish a postal union and a mail union, and he's a mail carrier number 65721, and he's got mail for them that was never delivered, and he's bringing it. And he does this to get food and be taken care of, and they treat him like a hero when he's in town. He's got letters for people from dead relatives and relatives who might still be alive, and so they treat him like a hero. And then he's ready to leave the next day, and someone walks up with a letter and says, "Could you please bring this and deliver it?" And now he's being entrusted with mail to bring to another village, and he starts doing this and bringing mail village to village because they're treating him like a hero and they're lavishing him with gifts and food. And he accidentally builds this amazing hope and faith amongst these people. And the antagonist clearly wants to crush that out when he learns about him. And I don't want to spoil it. It's like a 30-year-old movie, but I refuse to spoil it.
This does sound like something I might actually like.
It's amazing. It's my favorite movie of his.
I don't want to know who the antagonist is now if you say I'm going to
Yeah,
like it, so I really
you'll
don't
like
want to
it.
look it up.
Yeah, go
Okay.
watch it. The Postman. It's fantastic. You can probably stream it anywhere by now. But The Postman is my number one. And then Zombieland is probably my number two. I love that movie so much.
I want to change my list. I forgot about Zombieland.
Zombieland was great.
The Twinkies.
The Twinkies, yes, the Twinkies. I still haven't seen Zombieland 2. I was so afraid that they would ruin it. I never watched it, and I probably should at some point.
Not as good as the first. It's not bad, but yeah, not as good as the first.
All
Yeah,
right.
first is the primo.
For the third one, it would have been 12 Monkeys. I kind of want to say I Am Legend, even though it wasn't that good, but I have such a love for the book. And it's dramatically different from the book, especially in the ending. It doesn't do it justice, but I love the book so much.
There were two endings that they shot, and they showed one at one point and then got some feedback and showed the other one, I think, in the
Really?
main run. I think, yeah,
I'll
because
have to look at that.
I think the ending that they the other ending they shot that hadn't really got run with was the zombies are trying to like rescue that other zombie that he has, and once he gives her back, they're like, okay, we're all good, and they go away.
So, have you read the book
No.
by Richard Matheson, he's one of my all-time favorite writers. He was a big inspiration for Stephen King. Like, I style a lot of my short stories after his style. The book is the last person alive in a vampire apocalypse, and he doesn't really know what's going on, but he's a very like can-do, hands-on, handyman kind of guy. He goes and literally breaks into the public library during the daytime and starts studying all these blood diseases and biology and molecular biology. And he figures out what's going on, determines, what vampires really are, and finds interesting solutions and basically becomes a do-it-yourself scientist. And he begins hunting them and taking them out like they're hunting at night, and he's trapping them, and he hunts them is what he is. And the whole premise of the book is when you get to the end, and essentially, like the entire city's worth of vampires are gathered against him. And the title is him. Like it's the vampires talking to him and saying, "You are a legend among our people. You are a horrifying, terrifying, awful legend. We're not monsters. We're people. This is our world now. You're the monster." And you get that message much more in the book than you do in the movie, which, is the downside with the movie. But I still really enjoyed the movie.
I think that's why people didn't like the, because I think if the zombies are just trying to kidnap, get back one of their own, and then they leave him alone and go away, it's like, oh well, he shouldn't be killed, we shouldn't be killing them. But
Yeah.
it's, that makes it much more gray and much less black and white, which is hard
When they
sometimes to
killed the
handle.
dog, it hurt. That one really hurt. I'm a
Yeah.
sucker for dogs dying. That one gets me.
Yeah. I mean, there's how many John Wick movies about about stuff like that. And
Yeah.
that was Shooter with Mark Wahlberg, which we discussed earlier on a thing. The I can't remember what it was exactly, but the FBI agent guy, that actor has been around a lot too, and he said something like, "Oh, why don't we just do this?" And he goes, "They killed my dog," and he just walks off, and he's like, "Oh no, they're gonna fucking get it."
Yep.
I do want an honorable mention now that I've had more time to think about this. The Rover.
I
I
haven't seen
had to
it.
pull it up to get it exactly right. It says it's a 2014 film. Full disclosure, a very weird kind of watch. It's very drama. It's not sci-fi or anything like that. I'm not going to look up the rest of it. I want to say it's set in Australia, and it's definitely post-apocalyptica, desert, no vegetation. People are living in vehicles and little 5 and 10 vehicle little villages, if you will. And the main role is played by Guy Pearce. And he has his little shanty shack, whatever, and his little crappy ass car. And his car gets stolen by, I want to say it's like two or three guys, and they're all brothers. And he is chasing them down, like to the next little settlement or whatever you want to call it. And one of the brothers is played by Robert Pattinson. He is some sort of like level of autism or special needs or something like that. He's very slow. He's a little bit slow. But the scenario goes that Guy Pearce at least gets a hold of him and says, "You're gonna lead me to where my car is." And then the rest of the movie is sort of their travels together and them talking to each other, and it ends up being, a couple of people die and all that stuff, and I guess I can ruin it. I don't know.
No, don't ruin it. It's fine. We've been on this topic long enough. We can move along.
Well, the point there is a tie in here. So for those of you who have some time to watch it, there is a tie in here to this. You find out why it's so important for Guy Pearce's character to get his car back.
We had Twinkies in there, right?
Well,
Gotta get the Twinkies.
something better and more sad.
A box of Twinkies? Snowballs?
It's a perfect reveal because, in one sense, you feel like people didn't necessarily have to die over this, but in another sense, you can absolutely 100% completely understand why someone would go to all these lengths to do what he did. I'll tell you after recording's over.
No, because now I want to go watch it. It's fine. I'm sure I can find that somewhere.
Yeah, it's one of those movies that is, it feels like it's slow the whole time. By the time you get to the end of it, you're like, "Holy shit, I really liked that movie. It was very gripping." I thought it was gripping for someone who normally doesn't do the highly dramatic interpersonal following.
All right, dad jokes it is.
Dad jokes it is.
What'd you bring for dad jokes today?
I have a bad one. It's not a question, it's just a punchline.
It's okay. I'm good with that.
Organic chemistry is difficult. Those who study it have all kinds of trouble. All kinds.
Yeah, got there. Took me a minute. I brought a Super Bowl joke.
You and your themes.
Has to
You
be
have to
tied
stop
in.
showing me up on every single one of
I'm not
these.
showing you up. I'm a writer. This is a sickness of my own. It's not showing you up. I just can't help it. It's a compulsion. What do you call 50 guys getting together and watching the Super Bowl? Doug is sitting there flailing his arms at the computer screen, reaching for his beverage.
Oh God, is it the Browns?
No, I was going to say the Detroit Lions. I wasn't going to do
Okay.
that to you.
Oh. No, that's mean. They actually were good this year. They almost made it.
They were. I wanted them to make it
I
too. I
did. I wanted
really
them
did.
to. I really, really did. Like I said, I wanted the Lions or the Packers to be on the NFC side. Would have been my okay, I'm actually watching this story.
Yeah. You know what the Browns would do if they won the Super Bowl?
Well, considering what happened when the Cavs won, they probably burned down the whole city.
No, they'd turn off the PlayStation. See, I didn't go there at first, but you got the other one right, so I had to go there eventually.
Why are you so mean to me and my people?
It's a coping mechanism for the way my people let me down.
Yeah, better luck next year for all of us.
Yeah. All right, I'm not going to say it. Instead, thank you
On
all for
Tom's happy
listening.
note.
Thank you all for listening. This one went really long. Hopefully our editor, Doug, makes it shorter.
Trust
But
me, this is not going to be as long as
by
it is.
the time it gets to your ears, I hope it's about 45 minutes. We'll see where we get. Thank you for listening. If you haven't already, find us on Facebook, find us on whatever podcast platform you're listening to us on. Follow, like us, rate us, leave us comments, leave us feedback. Email us, buy our merchandise, say nice things about us to your neighbors. All the things help us grow this and help us make it better. We really do appreciate. We've had over 500 downloads at the time that we're recording this, and we've only been live for what,
Month.
3 weeks, 4 weeks?
It's been a month and we've hit 500.
Yeah. So we do appreciate all the support. Those of you that I know are listening, Will, I'm going to get some more police stories in here for you, I promise. John, by now you should have heard the episode where we talk about you and Raven. Hopefully you've corrected me and I can update that at a future point. Jim, I can't wait to hear what your favorite post-apocalyptic movies are. I think that's pretty much all the shout-outs I really have to give.
My shout out is Alex. Thanks for telling us how to make a decent podcast.
Thank you for that. We appreciate it.
And John, not Raven's John, my John.
Different John.
You are an absolute gem. Great friend, very supportive, very helpful with all that you do. So thank you.
I'm not gonna say it. I'm not going to. Thank you all for listening. We will catch you later.
See you guys.